Hello and welcome back to Matchday Matinee. It's been a while, guys, but we're here. I'm very excited to be back with season three. We've got new movies and new format, but one thing that remains the same is, as ever, I'm joined by Mark. How are you doing?
Awesome. Adam, how are you doing?
I am doing pretty good, thank you. It has been a long time. We are still in the midst of lockdowns, despite everything.
Season three.
I thought we'd be
one and done. We'd get one season done out the door, and then we'd be free from lockdown. Coronavirus would be in our rearview mirrors, but here we are.
Yep, and you keep talking about how one day we'll record an episode in a pub, but that seems like a distant dream at this point, to be honest.
Cheers each other, tears in our eyes.
Yeah, one day we'll get there. Okay, are you ready to kick off this new format then?
Let's do it.
So we're just going to explain each section as we go along, and maybe listeners can let us know what they think of it. So the first thing is, what you're wearing. So this was kind of like... just to think, I don't know about you, but I have bought a lot of football shirts in lockdown. I actually carried my Portsmouth shirts last night. I have 22 now. I think I had like five before the lockdown started.
How does your wife know about?
She knows about all of them. She might not know the true cost of all of them, but that's okay.
Price is the issue. Because they look like ratty old shirts too, so you can be like, a couple bucks.
Exactly. Some of them are, though. To be fair, I got some bargains. Like one I got the other day for like $9, like a Portsmouth 2005 away kit that no one wants, clearly. Yeah. So it's just a chat about, sometimes we'll wear like football paraphernalia, sometimes we might be wearing like geeky shirts or whatever, and we'll just talk about them. So I will start us off. Today I'm wearing a shirt that's very dear to my heart, that is tangentially linked to Italy. This is the Portsmouth 2008-2009 shirt. So the year after we won the FA Cup. It was our 110th year anniversary. It's a nice royal blue, and they added gold to the trim for the first time. It's made by Canterbury, who actually went bankrupt not long after this, but they were traditionally a rugby kit manufacturer. Mm-hmm. And the way this is linked to Italy is it's really famous because we played AC Milan in the group stages of the Europa League, or I might have still been the UEFA Cup back then. And we famously drew 2-2 with AC Milan. And we're talking a team that had Ronaldinho, Inzaghi, Kaká, like a really 2008-2009 season.
David Beckham, right? He was on his loan spell from Allegheny.
Oh, it possibly would have been before then, though, because it would have been... MLS would have been running at the same time because it was group stages. So we were winning 2-0 with goals from Yunus Kabul and Kanu. And then Ronaldinho scored a fantastic free kick, as he's known to do. And then Inzaghi scored a really like 89th minute equalizer or something to break our hearts. Could have had a famous win against AC Milan in the end. It was a 2-2 draw. Fratton Park was packed that night. I didn't go to the match. I had to watch it on TV. So that's what I'm wearing. Mark, you were wearing a pretty Canadian top today.
And it's kind of funny that the story that you told her, right? So I'm wearing a now vintage York United beautiful three-quarter zip. But it's funny, that story you told about the cup, was it semifinal, quarterfinal? Coming from behind to almost beat the bigger club. I mean, you and I were at a match two years ago now. York 9 almost beat Montreal Impact.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You remember that? Yeah, and I think the final score was 2-2.
2-2, yeah. And that was
for a while there, I think they were winning. Yeah, and okay, that's probably one of the best CPL matches I've ever been to.
Definitely. Yeah. I'd say it's the best I went to for sure.
Yeah, but so, yeah, York 9, three-quarter zip. I still love the colors. A bit of a sentimental connection to it since it was the first club that I've been a part of the launch of. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'll definitely be wearing this match day York United whenever we're back in the stands.
One day. So next thing, we're going to kind of introduce the movie and a few things around the release. It's going to be a little bit different. So we are doing The Divine Ponytail today, which is a Netflix created biopic focusing on the life and career of Italian legend Roberto Baggio. It was released on the 26th of May 2021. I couldn't find the budget anywhere because it's a Netflix original. They sometimes don't release that information. I also couldn't find many filming details other than the fact that it was filmed in Italy. It only currently has two critic reviews on Rotten Tomatoes, one rotten and one fresh.
New York Times?
Yeah, that was one of them. And it has an audience rating of 73% currently. So the next bit is kind of giving a bit of context to the film's release. So number one, so top of the global Billboard at the time of release is a song called Good For You by Olivia Rodrigo. And top of the box office is Spiral from the Book of Saw, which has been at the top 2 weeks, making $15.9 million, which is not a lot. But obviously COVID times, limited screens and everything. Do you know anything about Good For You by Olivia Rodrigo or Spiral from the Book of Saw, Mark?
Saw, I used to like, they used to come out every single year, and I'd go and take my wife to watch them every single year as they'd come out. I think the first seven. I haven't seen this one though, but it's kind of interesting. So like this will work for the older movies, top of the box office. But now that we're in the streaming age, I mean, we kind of have to mention what movies are currently streaming.
Yeah, so maybe we'll have Army to do like what's one in that, because Netflix do that like trending chart thing, don't they?
Yeah, they just released Army of the Dead, which has kind of been in the pop culture zeitgeist for the last week
or two. Still got to watch it. Definitely bigger because of Zack Snyder and the Snyder Cut and everything. Like that movie's kind of taken off more than it would have been a hit anyway, but it's definitely got that. And then, Good For You by Olivia Rodrigo. I listened to it. She sounds a little bit like Lorde, like kind of talking. And
really?
Yeah, kind of talking, and then like a beat drops and she starts singing properly.
I like Lorde.
It was fine. Nothing special. And then football at the time. So ordinarily, this would be a chance for us to kind of go back and look at what was going on in football at a movie's release. For us, this was literally last week. So some of the highlights we've had are the European Super League fallout. Lille winning League One or Un, Atleti Madrid winning La Liga, Villarreal beating Manchester United in the Europa League final in comedic fashion on penalties. One of the best like penalty shootouts ever, like so many of those players, it was 11-10 on penalties. So many of those players absolutely nailed their penalties, like smashed them straight in the top corner, came to David De Gea and he took a really tame penalty.
Yeah, you knew he was going to miss it as soon as he stepped up to this
penalty. 100%. Chelsea beat Manchester City in the Champions League final with a goal from Kyle Havertz. Somehow Chelsea, despite being owned by a Russian oligarch, were the underdogs in that game. And then, we're just on around the corner from Euro 2020 in 2021, as we're calling it. So they didn't have to remake all the merchandise. So normally we talk about football and kind of like if it was a film in the 90s, we'd go back. But that's just a bunch of rundown of stuff that's happened. I'm really excited for the Euros. I really don't have an idea who's going to be good or bad. Seems a bit of a weird one because players are knackered from playing in weird code like 2-3 games a week.
So
I'm looking forward to the Euros.
Portugal's got like a decently young squad that have been making noise in the European League, so I'm excited for that. They're the defending champions right now, so.
Oh, of course.
I'll be cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, and England have got reason to be optimistic after the World Cup, I guess.
Yeah. It's just the group that we're in. I think we have Germany, France, and Hungary in our group.
Oh, okay.
So that'll be interesting. But I think a lot of third place losers go through.
Yeah, like the best third place losers or something. Our group is Croatia, Scotland, which is a good game, and Czech Republic. Anyway, shall we get on to the movie?
Let's do it.
So we're not going to slavishly go over the plot like we used to, but we are going to go over a quick plot synopsis, and then we'll talk about our highlights of the film and kind of what we thought about it. So The Divine Ponytail, as we mentioned, is a biopic movie that follows the highs and lows of Italian legend Roberto Baggio, from kicking in his father's garage windows to skying that penalty at USA 94. We get it all in this film. 220 stitches in his leg, a big move to Fiorentina, Baggio's abandonment of Catholicism for Buddhism, the obligatory training montage, this time with an injured player, and also one that contains no ball, seemingly to make up for the lack of football skills from the director. The movie jumps around a lot and heads the year 2000 with us seeing a struggling Baggio finding it hard to come to terms with a penalty miss, despite the fact that he won back-to-back Serie A Scudettos with Juventus and AC Milan. He gets a bit emo as a result and threatens to cut down a tree, and then we get one final time jump that sees us go to 2002 when Baggio is controversially left out of the World Cup squad for Japan and South Korea. Baggio meets some fans in the street who somewhat enthusiastically chant his name and ask for autographs as the movie draws to an end. So that's a whistle-stop tour. Mark, I'm really interested to see what you thought of this film.
I did not like this movie. Thank God. I was super disappointed. Okay. I was super disappointed too going into it. And so I think the one thing that kind of woke me up to it was on Twitter, I had been kind of promoting that this movie's coming out. We're going to cover it. And then our like friend of the show, Rob H., had mentioned no player has, and I wrote down his tweet here, I can't think of another player that is unjustly remembered for his worst moment in such a brilliant career. And growing up, Baggio to me was, back then I didn't watch domestic soccer. I had watched the major tournaments. So to me, Baggio was this guy who on the world's biggest stage roofed a penalty. And it was the one thing that you could endlessly tease your Italian friends about. So that's all I knew him from, right? Yeah. And going into it, like in preparation for the show, I started to watch more Baggio footage and listen to stories about his career and just learn more about the guy. So I got really excited for this movie. And then it was a total letdown, and is focusing on that one moment that he was unjustly remembered for. So to me, I just thought, you know, you had so much potential to tell the story of this guy, and you're still hinging the entire movie on that one moment that everyone knows him for. Mm-hmm. And really, he should not be remembered for.
No, like he went on to have a really good career. Like he won back-to-back titles with Juventus and AC Milan. Yeah. He went to Bologna and kind of helped them out. Like they were a smaller team. And Brescia as well is where he ended his career. Yeah. He redeemed himself at World Cup 98. Like he scored a penalty in a match and then also scored a penalty in a shootout as well.
But they didn't even show it in this movie. It's like he scored the penalty against Chile, and I think he said he felt redeemed because he killed the ghost.
Yeah.
Were his words. And they didn't even show that in this movie. Mm. Like the redemption arc in this movie, I think he didn't have one, right? No.
I guess his redemption arc was that he didn't get called up to the World Cup in 2002, but the fans still cared.
Well, Brescia, I think getting them promoted. Did he get them promoted?
I can't remember.
Like they ended the movie on that where he got the adoration from Italians, and it's like, nah, you didn't earn this ending. And there was so many better redemption stories that you could have gone with, like namely 98. They skipped over that entire period.
Yeah.
Like he woke up sweating in the middle of the night over that 94 penalty kick, and then they showed a bit of his like club career, and then the ending of the movie was him trying to make it to Korea, Japan, 2002. And he doesn't make it. So then at that point, you don't want to end the movie on such a dour note. So they have this weird gas station scene where somebody recognizes him, and then just like 30 fans come out of nowhere to just take photos with him. And it was such an unearned ending.
And it was really underwhelming because none of the extras were convincing. There were people clearly not chanting in the background, and they were just sort of smiling, clapping. Yeah, all this, you could hear this chanting, and it was just like, this is really crappy. And yeah, it just jumped about too much. Like, there's ways to do this better, and I hate to always compare it to other films. You look at Damned United, and it's a longer film for sure, but that covers such a, like, if you go back and listen to that first episode we did, it was so long as I tried to cover all of the history. It covered such a broad period of time, but did it so much better, where this is just jump, jump, jump. Like, you don't see any of the growth as a kid. We see him scoring a penalty as a youngster, then we see him telling his dad and his dad just comes to look at us as an asshole.
It's such a trope in soccer movies for some reason. Yeah. Like the jerk dad, right?
Yeah.
We have a category in our end of the year awards, like worst dad of the season. Dad, because there's always a few of them. And they use like the same kind of plot device as the Pele movie, where he promises his dad he's going to win a World Cup for him.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if that was actually a true Baggio moment, but it didn't work for me.
No. What was the other thing I was going to say? And then the whole Buddhism subplot. So he goes to like a record store and befriends the record store owner because he keeps coming in and asking for albums by the Eagles. Like, Eagles, I don't know if Baggio's really a fan. And this guy's like, hey, you got to be happy. If you're a Buddha, if you're a Buddhist, you'd be happy. And it's just like, if you read into it, it's a big deal that he like lived in a predominantly Catholic country as Italy is. Yeah. Like, and he abandoned it. And it's just kind of like, yeah, cool. His wife converted as well, but they still did have a Catholic wedding, presumably to appease their families, I guess. Yeah, it's kind of just weird. It's just like, yeah, you'll feel better if you follow the way of Buddha. Here's some few lessons, and you seem kind of meditating, and then But then he doesn't, there's no lesson there. He doesn't find balance from it. He's still traumatized and having cold sweats.
Yeah. The thing too is I think the entire second act of the movie is the 94 World Cup USA, right? Like, it didn't need to be that. There was the first act that you're talking about with the record store and the Eagles record. But they talk about his time at Fiorentina. So I think they show very briefly at the movie, he's at Vicenza.
Yeah.
And then he goes to Fiorentina, and that happens within, like, I think 20 minutes.
Yeah.
But then they skip over that entire period where his legend starts to grow, right? And this is why people loved him so much going into the 94 World Cup. But they skip over that entirely. And I think he's on the phone with, was that his sister or that was his girlfriend?
Girlfriend.
His girlfriend. Okay. Yeah. This is kind of weird. But I think she says, like, you scored a goal against Napoli and Maradona with Fiorentina. People still talk about it a year later. Why would you not show that goal?
Yeah.
That's such a legendary goal where, like, he comes from his own box pretty much, right? Dribbles past, I don't know how many guys, dribbles past the keeper to put it in. And they don't show that. They just, like, literally just mention it quickly.
Yeah.
So they cut out so much of that just to get to the 94 World Cup. And you don't get that character buildup. And like you're saying about the conversion to Buddhism, right? That was part of what made Baggio so, like, such an alluring character. Mm. Like, in modern times, he would have been everywhere on, I don't want to say he would have been, like, one of the most highly sponsored athletes, because I don't think that was part of who he was. He was a very recluse person, right?
Yeah.
From what I was reading.
Now he's, like, disappeared since he...
Yeah, exactly.
Since he quit his job with the Italian FA, he's kind of just disappeared into nowhere.
Yeah, but he would have been everywhere in the sense that he was such a character with, like, the unique hairstyle, right? Like Il Divino Codino, that divine ponytail, and being Buddhist in a country of Roman Catholics. And just the way he played, like, he never took the easy route. Like, he would take an extra touch when he didn't need to. Yeah. He could have chipped it over the keeper, but he wanted to dribble around the keeper and just kind of knock it in easy.
And there is a cool scene about that where the Italian coach is being like, one touch, one touch, one touch. And then he's like, well, how will I dribble past anyone if I can only take one touch?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's kind of what he was known for. And I think that's one of the reasons he's not as well regarded in some respects, or some people dismiss him, because he would disappear from games because he was either kind of all or nothing, and it was like he'd be absolutely magical or he'd be marked out of a game and not be able to kind of cope. And I kind of remember that, like, we were talking in our Slack chat around how I saw a lot of Baggio because of Football Italia, which was a magazine show that used to be on Channel 4 in England. So Saturday mornings, it'd be like James Richardson, who presents the Totally Football show now, would present like a highlight show, and then it'd be a live match every Sunday. Mm-hmm. So I saw a lot of Baggio play, and even then you'd remember he was one of those players you'd get hyped about watching, and me and my brother used to watch it a lot because we didn't get Sky Sports until a little bit later, so that was our only live football we watched for a few years was Italian football, and Baggio is one of those names. And I do remember my brother used to like Juventus because he supports Newcastle and they were black and white. So then he was like, there would be games where Baggio did nothing and he'd be like, nah, Baggio sucks and stuff. So
interesting.
But yeah,
you live and die by highlights pretty much, right?
Exactly,
that's why people remember you.
Yeah. What I do find weird as well, they hype up all that getting to the World Cup and then they don't show a lot of key moments of the games. Like, and yeah, it's really poorly done. I did like the fact that he scores two goals against Nigeria and they play Oasis Supersonic, because that's the song that did actually come out. Yeah, I had to look it up. It came out in April of that year, so it was a big song back then. I thought it was a bit later.
Yeah, some of the music choices were so weird. Like, they used Smashing Pumpkins in 1979.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. And I love that song. Like, I grew up with that song, right? But it just comes in out of nowhere. Made me almost hate it. And then later on, they use Black Keys, Run Right Back to You.
Yeah.
When he's recovering. And I have no idea. Like, I looked up the time that would have came out. And at that point in the movie, it was 2001. That song came out around 2008, 2009. So that doesn't even match up. It's just, I guess, the director liked that song, so he used it. There's a couple of weird things like that. I would have preferred they stuck to, like, Italian pop music.
Yeah.
Kind of continue, like, to build that vibe, right?
That would have been cool, yeah. Like, actual... And especially seeing as it's... I mean, we haven't spoken about it, so it's in Italian. So,
yeah.
Like, why have English-speaking songs? It's the main soundtrack.
But that happens, right? Like, yeah. Just crossover, I guess. Like, Madonna is popular everywhere in the world, regardless.
And there are cover versions of songs during it as well, though, in the background. Like, when he's in the record shop, it's playing some Italian cover of something. I forget what it was.
Really?
So they do that a bit, but yeah, not enough.
Yeah. So I don't want to completely dismiss the movie, because I think a lot of it was great, but the screenplay just completely let it down. Like, the main actor was amazing.
Was he, though?
I thought so. Like, no, he had the look. He got it down.
He had the look. Kind of I don't know how cockiness. Good an actor he was, though, in some bits.
He had that humble cockiness to him. If you know what I mean? Like, it's oxymoron, but he did still have that kind of... He would talk back. He had those little moments of disrespect, but he was still humble in that sense.
I guess the bits I didn't like is when he was upset and stuff, he just seemed to, like, sneer. Like, the bit I joked about when I was reading the synopsis, when he was really upset and was going to cut down that tree.
Yeah.
He didn't really look that upset. And to the point where the director actually, like, part of it, it cut to his back and him stood looking at it, and you couldn't see his face. And I'm like, is that because he was struggling to evoke the actual emotion they wanted? And they were just like, ah, just show his sister and we'll look at the back of him instead. I don't know.
But is that because he's Buddhist?
Maybe he's just trying to be more stoic, I guess, and not
trying to remain zen, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. He did definitely nail the look, and he wasn't the only one that they nailed the look. One that came to mind is when you see the US 94 final, is like the Dunga lookalike looks like Spawn.
Yes,
like I was like, amazing. That looks exactly like him. And there were a couple of others that I noticed throughout that did really. And considering they were just bit parts, it's not like Summer of 92 where we spend extended time with a lot of the players. Yeah. It's like that was like a 2-minute thing we saw Dunga.
No, casting was done well. Like, cinematography, I think, was done well. We'll talk about more in Footy Flicks, but the actual football scenes, I don't know. What do we talk about in Footy Flicks? Is it the action itself, or is it the filming of the scenes and everything? Let's figure that out.
This all encompassing.
Everything? Okay.
Let's go. So if you're done talking about highlights of the film or what we think about
it, I'm going to kick that one down the road. I'll kick it down the road. Yeah, I guess, like, one thing I thought of was, if you are going to form your opinion on Baggio, like this mysterious character based on this movie, you would think that he's just this really kind of like somber character that there was no joy in his life or anything, right? And you didn't really get the moments of brilliance in football that he had.
No.
Very few and far between.
I mean, we do see the two goals he scores against Bulgaria, and he comes off with a hamstring injury, but like you don't see a whole bunch of it. It's not enough. Like,
I was gonna say, yeah, okay,
yeah, I don't know.
It's just a sad movie. It's such a for the character of not character, but for the I guess the person that was Baggio that you want people to remember, and what comes across in this movie. It's just so dismal, right? It's the entire movie is just dismal, very somber. And the thing that kind of struck me is, I know he does have his ghost, as he called it, that he carries with him. But at the end of the movie, they have the message on screen from Baggio himself that says, like, thank you to everyone involved in this movie. And it makes me wonder, how involved was he in the making of this movie? And if he was heavily involved, how sad is it that this is the movie and the story that he wants to tell?
Mm-hmm.
It skips over all like the highlights and the brilliance of his career at the beginning. Goes for the entire second act about 94 World Cup, which is the worst moment of his career. And then talks about his road to the 2002 World Cup, where he thinks he can have this last flash of glory, and doesn't happen. And then the movie just kind of ends, right?
Like, yeah.
Is that the story you want to tell? Is
when you compare it to something like the Pelé movie where he told this glorious story about how amazing he was. And it's like, yeah, that's if he was involved in it and signed off on it, that's kind of depressing.
Yeah, that's what like that was the last scene in the movie. Well, there's some real life footage afterwards.
Yeah, but that's the last like fiction part of the movie. Bunch. I was expecting us to get like the full roll call with like texts of like he went on to win this and this and he's Italy's whatever it is like 8th highest goal scorer of all time and stuff like that, and it was just like nothing. I was just like, oh,
everything in this movie is just like it's low lights. It's like this is the Baggio's low lights, the entire movie. Like they talk about him scoring the goal against Napoli and it was just like over a phone call, and then he wins the Ballon d'Or in 93, was it?
Yeah, that rings a bell. Yeah, and all you see is like a snap of the trophy or something.
Yeah, it's like a 2 second moment of like him winning the trophy. Yeah, it's sad more than anything, I think. And it just continues the tragic legend that is like Baggio, right?
Yeah. And they seem to overly indulge in that moment too. It's just so when he takes that penalty, he has a voiceover, which I kind of think wrecks it because it's breaking that rule of like show, don't tell.
Yeah.
And he's just talking about how like plumbing the depths of missing the penalty. And it's just like, it really seems to like almost gratuitously, that's not really the right use of that word, but like,
no,
it's just like indulging in a horrible moment way too much.
It's just, I just cringe that moment. So he's just, because there's that like that well-known shot of him just standing at the spot with his hands on his hips and just completely dejected because it was on him to win the World Cup for Italy. So they have that shot in the movie. And then there's the little kid audio from the beginning of the movie when he does score the penalty and he's cheering for himself. And he's like, oh, Baggio scores. But it's just him standing there staring at the floor. And you're like, I want to watch this. This is really uncomfortable.
Okay. Was there any other highlights you wanted to talk about?
No. I mean, we'll get into some footy flicks, but I think that's a good discussion on the movie itself.
Okay, let's talk about footy flicks then. What did you think of the football scenes?
You know what? The technical aspect of it, I'm always kind of like, if it looks cool, somebody scores and I get across what they're doing, then I'm not looking for a highlight quality levels of play. So I'm always looking at it from like the filming point of view and like the cinematography of it and the way everything just kind of vibes. And I thought they did a really cool job with this. Like if you look at the scenes, even when he's at Vicenza and they have the like the tifo in the crowd and they have flares going and the crowd is like it's densely packed, right? Everything looks really good. It doesn't look like it's green screened or anything like that. And then to the bigger matches, there was one shot of the Rose Bowl in the 94 World Cup where it's an overhead view. And it looks like when York Knight showed off their stadium renderings. Like, and they're like, this is what it's going to look like on match day. It didn't look like that. But when they showed that scene in the 94 World Cup, like it looked super fake, but it just looked amazing. Like it was just such an energetic shot. That looked really cool. They got the Adidas Questra ball right when he's on the spot.
Yeah.
I really did like all of the footy scenes. I know they're doing the typical thing of like the ball at the feet and there's just a flurry of feet kicking around.
I did notice as well, like even lower. Like a lot of those shots, you didn't even see their knees. Like it was like half of the sock and down.
Lots of shots lingering on shoes for some reason.
Yep.
But there was some cool shots. There was one really cool shot overhead of Baggio's goal against, I think it was Bulgaria. Which was like, it was directly bird's eye view and then just cut across three defenders. I thought that was really cool. So overall, I thought it was they were well done in terms of the filming of them. We also get a Pep Guardiola cameo.
Oh, I missed that, didn't we?
Yeah.
Oh, because they play Brescia. Spain. Yeah.
No, when he's playing for Brescia, he was on the team as well. So that's my take. What did you think about the footy flicks out of?
Kind of feel this. I think it was super impressive. Like even from the very start, like you see that, like you said, you see the ball and it pans across and you see all the advertising hoardings and they're super authentic. Like you saw Snickers and MasterCard on there. And it's like, that's cool. I think they look really well made, but I think there's almost an element of style over substance for me. I felt there was something about them. I felt there was like lacking like a passion to it or something. And even when they did the trope we see as well of a lot of like cut to footage, cut to the crowd reacting instead. And it just felt like when his family were watching, none of them seemed that engaged. And like, I don't know, I had a disconnect. I think they were really, really well made and attention to detail was all there, but they didn't capture the like passion of the game for me. I don't know what it was. And then ironically, like they made the final of the 94 World Cup seemed way more like an exciting game than it was, even though I think there was meant to be a pretty boring final for all intents and purposes. They somehow
managed. That's Hollywood, baby.
Yeah, like they managed to like zhuzh it up like really well when it perhaps didn't deserve it. So it's like style ups. I don't think it's as up there as the best, but they did look good. And I just, some of that's because it's the most modern film we've looked at, I think. So like it's in 4K, like everything looks really crisp. They did the thing that a lot of these films do really well, like got really good replicas of all the kits, all the training gear. Like they're all in their tracksuits and stuff, and they all look like spot on.
There's a lot of beautiful kits in this movie.
Yeah, like there's a lot of really iconic kits, like the Italy kit that year is. Brazil's kit's really cool. Yeah. But yeah, so I kind of am on the same page, but I wasn't excited watching them in the same way I am some of these films.
Yeah.
And it's not
this is cool stuff too. Like they had an effect where it would show the game and then it would go onto a TV and then kind of zoom out into the living room. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah,
we like you were saying, once they showed the people watching the matches, they weren't actually like passionate about it. So maybe they were watching the actual match from 94, not the Hollywood version.
Maybe. And I think we've seen better versions of that stuff. Like the Goal did it well by taking like crowd footage from other games and stuff and superimposing it. So it feels better. I don't know how they did it in this. It just didn't feel right.
Yeah. The soccer itself, but the everything surrounded, I think they nailed it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah. Okay, so that was Footy Flicks. Before we rank this film, as stupid as that sounds, we're going to play a new game. Right. So because there's only two of us, we're not going to do a quiz. We're going to play Your Players Right. So in the vein of Play Your Cards Right, I'm going to give you a stat and a player, and then you're going to go higher or lower. And because you're the first player playing this season, Mark, you're going to set the benchmark that all of our future guests and potentially myself and you will try to beat going forward, okay?
It'll be a low bar.
So it is related to the movie. Okay. So Roberto Baggio scored 27 international goals in 56 games. I'm going to name you another player and you're going to tell me if it's higher or lower if they scored more international goals than Roberto Baggio. So the first player we have is former Juventus and Chelsea striker Gianluca Vialli. So did he score more or higher or lower than 27 goals?
Ooh, see, this is challenging because it's 27 goals in 56 games, which is a pretty incredible record. I'm going to say lower.
Correct. So you're off the mark. You got one. Gianluca Vialli scored 16 goals in 59 games.
Okay,
the next one we have is Alessandro Del Piero. So former Juventus legend.
Wife's favorite player.
Whose?
My wife.
Oh, okay.
She made me buy tickets to go see them at the Sky Dome, Juventus versus Fiorentina.
Just because of him. Okay, cool. So higher or lower?
Oh, then 27? He's going to be...
No, higher. Then 16 it was. So, so we're doing it from Vialli. So Vialli scored 16, so higher or lower than 16?
Higher.
Yeah. So he scored 26 in 91 games.
Okay,
yeah. Okay, next up we have Filippo Inzaghi. So we talked about him before, AC Milan striker. He scored against Portsmouth, but how many international goals did he score? Higher or lower than 26?
I'm going to say higher.
Oh, I'm afraid.
Lower.
It's lower by one. He scored 25 goals in 57 games.
Okay. So my streak ends at what, three?
We'll give you three because you get the first one for free. Yeah, we did three players. So yeah, so that's it. That's the highest score to beat is three in whatever we pick next time. So join us next time for more. Potentially, if we decide we like this format, that was Play Your Players Right. See, we didn't get to Giovinco was going to come up soon, eventually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was on the... So what I did is I just pulled the list of every player that scored and then I randomized it. I went with like top... I picked like the top 25 and then picked like the bottom one. So how many goals do you think he scored for Italy?
For Italy?
Yeah.
Giovinco?
Yeah.
Less than a handful. Yeah. It would have been under 20, under 10, I would say.
Keep going.
Under five.
Keep going.
Oh, really? One.
Yeah, he scored one in 20 appearances. Goal. A lot of those appearances were as a substitute, apparently.
Yeah, because he was on the bench for Juve, and then by the time he came to TFC,
Yeah.
He made like a small handful of appearances for Italy.
Yeah. Okay. So that was Play Your Players, right? So next, Mark,
yeah,
we have the rankings.
Yeah.
Season 3.
Yeah.
So this goes in number 1 for the time being. Where do you see it hanging ultimately? Do you think it's going to be a top contender, or do you think it's going to be one of those films that drops down through the season?
No, so the interesting thing is we haven't really picked our movies for this season. We're kind of freewheeling it. So I think this is probably going to be mid-table. We're going to look at a couple purposely awful films.
Yes, so yeah, we're going to have a few stinkers that I would imagine this is going to be.
Yes, that'll bump it up. And then are we doing goal 3 this season? I think we have to.
We'll get Raghav back to finish the trilogy.
Yeah, so it's going to go above that. So I'm going to say it's going to end up in like at least 8 or 9.
Yeah, definitely. I think so. Like 7, yeah. 8, 9, somewhere around there.
Yeah, and we got to do goal. Goal, I think the first one that we reviewed has like our highest views on YouTube for some reason. Exactly. It's like 10 or 11,000. So come back if you've listened to that one.
Yeah, if you listen to goal, come back for...
Yeah. So I have a question for you on this movie.
Sure.
So the Netflix Calcio cinematic universe is kind of off to an uneven start with Ultras.
Yeah.
And now Il Divin Codino. So what do you want to see next in this Netflix Italia universe?
I would like to see a movie about the match-fixing allegations of the 2002 World Cup. Because that got me, when I was reading about him not making the squad, that got me back down that whole rabbit hole of the conspiracy theorists that the FIFA wanted one of the hosts to make it forever, so South Korea, and like there was like an offside goal ruled out. There were like weird fouls given. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, the Calciopoli, that was my pick as well.
Yeah,
get some Berlusconi in there as well. I mean, you can't go wrong with that
for sure.
Yeah. Okay, so let's hope the third film in this series is Calciopoli, and then we'll have to have their Avengers moment where everyone comes together. Yeah. Not sure what that'll be, but we'll see it. Cool.
Okay. So thank you for joining us, everybody. This has been Matchday Matinee. Mark, where can people find you on the internet if they want to hear more of you?
Join me on Twitter at Mark83 and on Instagram at 83Football.
I am Joypad Goalposts on Twitter, Instagram, and aducky84 on Twitch. By the time you've listened to this, I will have streamed another round of episodes on my Twitch channel, and also tomorrow I'm playing some multiplayer of... It's called Knockout City, which is a dodgeball game.
Battle Royale, right?
Yeah, Battle Royale, like dodgeball game. So going to try some of that with some friends from Lapsed Gamer. So yeah, check that out.
I might stream some Mass Effect if I can get it working correctly.
Yeah.
This is my, I think, third or fourth playthrough of that entire trilogy.
I think I've done two. Not quite that. But it's a good franchise. Yeah, really good. Okay, so that's going to do it. You can follow us on Matchday Matinee on Twitter, so hit us up on there, send us any movie recommendations, and we are looking for guests, so if you would like to appear in a future episode, drop us a bell, DM, let us know. We'd love to have you on. So from the terraces to the theatre of dreams, we are Matchday Matinee. Thank you very much for watching.